Valentine borrowed a horse from Valdez and rode the big quarter horse hard down to Forest City. He posted a letter summarizing the relevant pieces of his conversation with Molly to the Miskatonic and saw to the feeding and care of his borrowed gelding. A few $100 of back pay disappeared into the stalls and markets the next morning, and a hard afternoon's ride later, he was back at Quapaw Post. Molly greeted Valentine at her screen door. Edward interposed himself in front of his mother.
What's all this?
Valentine set down canvas mailbags, and the child reached out with both hands. He was sophisticated enough to know what a big bag promised.
Season's greetings. It's customary to give a little something in exchange for valuable information.
He reached in and extracted 3 bolts of fabric.
Denim, of course, and I hope you like that green. You're the kind of blonde who can wear green.
A big bag of buttons came next.
Most of them match. I looked. I figured you could trade any you didn't like.
Shoes in various sizes for Edward came next. A heavy slab of bacon and wax paper. Great loops of sausage like ox yolks. Some lemons and limes. Candied dates. And a black and white ceramic cow that had probably once been a cookie jar. He'd let Molly discover the cookies inside on her own, if Edward didn't first.
I thought it looked like the cows in Wisconsin.
Holsteins.
Tea, powdered sugar, a bottle of brandy, even elastic-banded socks and underwear. Luxuries all. Smuggled from the Kurian zone, no doubt, but it was considered bad taste to ask a trader questions beyond quality. All joined the growing pile on the tiny table.
And some cans of jelly.
Jelly!
You're too much, David. They were just words, and I was angry.
I thought it was kind of refreshing. First time we'd been honest with each other since your dad's basement.
We were just about to have macaroni and ration cheese. I can fill another plate.
Fine.
They ate on the steps of the porch rather than clear off the table.
It, occurred to me on the ride back that I didn't know if you could sew. I recalled you were good with leather.
Not like my mom, but I'm getting better.
After Edward went to bed, they talked. Looking back on it, Valentine realized that he talked and Molly listened. Beck and leaving the wolves, Duvalier and training as a cat, the Eagle D brand in Nebraska's sandhills, the wild night of fire in the General's hangar, Jamaica, Haiti, rat pits, finding out that he'd been a father one rainy day in the Texas pine woods. The deaths of M-Daw and the Smalls. Hank. He raised his shirt and she touched the burns on his back. He couldn't feel whether her fingertips probed or caressed. The surface nerves were mostly dead. It felt so good to talk about it. Maybe because Molly was a piece of his life dating back to before so much of it had happened.
I can't sit anymore. There's a beautiful moon. You want to take a walk?
And what about Edward?
Mrs. Colbert can listen for him. She hears everything that goes on in the cabin anyway. It's all of 8 feet away.
Ugh, anything to help Southern Command's cheese along. Oof, you'd think something that greasy.
What is it about soldiers and their bowels? You'd think with a woman and a moon and a warm night, you'd just...
4 men on horseback leading a 5th saddled horse appeared. One of Valdez's men walked ahead and pointed toward Molly's cabin. Valentine could make out the uniforms, even in the dim light. The 2 in back were wolves. There was no mistaking the trademark soft buckskins and fringed rifle sheaths. The others wore the plain khaki and the round-brimmed smoky hats of the Rounders, Southern Command's law enforcement branch. Usually veteran guards, the Rounders patrolled the roads and bridges of Southern Command, keeping the population safe from bummers, people in the Ozarks without a stake of one kind or another, who were often conduits of everything from black market antibiotics to military information, and outright criminals. The Rounders often brought bad news to the harder-to-reach families as well. Rounder on the doorstep was a phrase that meant misfortune to most people living outside the towns.
Rounders.
The horses stopped in front of her cabin, and Edward appeared, seeking the comfort of her hymn. She picked her son up. Valentine went to the screen door of the tiny porch. A man with jowls spilling over his frayed collar approached. The jowly man's laminated name tag said Gobert. The wolves stayed on their horses. One looked halfway familiar to Valentine. Then it came to him. He'd been a wolf at his invocation, though the name escaped him. The wolves' hands were conspicuously off their weapons.
You Major Valentine?
Yes.
Could you step outside, sir?
What's this about?
Just step outside, please, sir.
They ignored Molly and her wide-eyed child. As Valentine came out, the wolves got off their horses.
You're a hard guy to find, Valentine.
The other rounder had spoken. He had cockeyed ears, like a hound listening to a raccoon on the roof. He handed a pair of handcuffs to Gobert.
Sir, please turn around and put your hands behind you.
What's this about?
You're under arrest for murder.
Murder?
Sorry, Major. Orders.
Gobert grabbed him firmly by the wrist. They patted him down. Valentine winced as the hard hands traveled over the old scar tissue on the backs of his legs.
David, what's going on?
It's gotta be a mistake.
Might be, but we have to take you to court. Okay, Jim. He's in custody. Make a note of the time.
Valentine looked again at the wolf with the walrus mustache. Hammond, that was his name. The other young wolves called him Lightning because he had a little tuft of blonde hair in his brown.
Hammond, what is this?
We just got orders to make sure you come in. These boys were scared you'd get wind and take to the hills.
Molly, I'm not a fugitive. I wasn't hiding with you.
Enough, Major. We've got to get you away. Help him mount, Hammond.
Put him up backward. Fugitive mount. They say he's tricky.
The wolves helped him mount. Sitting backward on the saddle made the night even more surreal.
My gear's in the barn.
It'll come along.
Where are you taking him?
Crowley Garrison Station. Been on the fort on it, ma'am.
David Valentine rode out of Quapaw Post backward. The soldiers came out of their cabins to see the rogue parade, wondering faces glowing in the moonlight like jack-o'-lanterns. They showed their paperwork at the gate and carried out his gear on the wolves' horses. Valentine, facing backward on his mount, carried only the memory of the fear in Edward Stockton's eyes and the doubt in Molly's. The Nut, May. The Nut was an Arkansas State medium-security correctional facility known as Pine Ridge before the Currien Order and would probably have remained another overgrown jumble of fence and concrete were it not for Mountain Home, the nearby town that fate selected to be the capital of the Ozark Free Territory, 2028 to 2070. In those chaotic years, the only law was martial, unless one counts the occasional lunchtime trial and afternoon hanging of looters and profiteers by horse and bike-mounted posses. Military justice required an incarceration facility, and as the only other prison nearby was being used to house rabies sufferers in the hope of finding a cure, Pine Ridge became Fort Allnut, named for its first commander. Sometime after his death, it became The Nut. The Nut is an asterisk-shaped building that might pass as a college dormitory were it not for the bars on the windows. Double lines of fencing separate it from the fields. The prisoners grow their own crops and raise their own livestock, and the better behaved they are, the more time they get outside the wire. And subsidiary buildings have sprung up around it. Two technical workshops, a health clinic, the guard dorm, and the courthouse that doubles as an administrative center surround the six-story concrete asterisk. Finally, there's the garage, an aluminum barn that houses a few wrecks used for spare parts. The garage is where condemned men are hung, traditionally at midnight on their day of execution. Valentine was proud of his memory, but in later years, he never recalled his arrival at the Nut with any real clarity. Mostly he remembered a military lawyer reading the charges against him to a gray and grave presiding officer, torture and murder of prisoners under his supervision during the Rising in Little Rock, the wild night of what was occasionally being called Valentine's Rising. Six men had died at the hands of the women he'd freed from the Currien prison camp. They were guards who had used dozens of women under their supervision as sort of a personal harem. Valentine had never known their names, and it was strange to hear them read out in court with all the formality that legal proceedings required. One wasn't known by any name other than Claw. Southern Command rarely tried its officers for the execution of armed quislings. Men caught fighting for the vampires were disposed of under a procedure informally called bang and bury. Two generations of bitter feelings between the sides and the Currien habit of sending their own armed prisoners straight to the Reapers had hardened both sides.
The court finds cause for a trial.
Valentine remembered that phrase. The judge declared that Valentine should be kept within Fort Allnut until the date of his trial, set for the end of the month, May 23rd to be precise. This rapidity struck Valentine as strange. His knowledge of Southern Command jurisprudence was based on one bad hearing after the destruction of Foxtrot Company at Little Timber Hill and the occasional Southern Command bulletin article, and it was rare to be tried within 6 months of one's arrest. And with those words, he went dumbly through the sanitary procedures at the jail entrance, climbed into shapeless baby blue scrubs with large yellow X's sewn onto the back, each leg, and the chest pocket, and went to his cell. His cell, he remembered. As a major, he got his own room in what his guard escort told him was the nicer wing of the nut. There was a door with a small glass window rather than bars, and windows that would open to admit a breeze, though the sturdy metal frame was designed so that he couldn't crawl out. The room had 5 1-foot square green linoleum floor tiles across and 9 deep. The bolted down bed bore a single plastic wrapped mattress and a depressed looking pillow in a cotton case that smelled like bleach, as did his combination sink and toilet. His ceiling had a brown painted light fixture, but no bulb.
They don't waste fluorescent tubes on cons, so the sun decides lights out. Hot chow in the cafeteria twice a day, and we bring out a soup and bread cart to the exercise yard for lunch. Questions?
How do I get a shave?
Valentine rubbed his 3-day beard. The guard, whose name tag read Young, but looked as though his first name should be Gus or Mick, or something else hearty and friendly, stuck his thumb in a belt loop.
There's 2 razors in the showers. You have to use them under supervision. Be sure to put it back in the blue cleanser.
I'm not a suicide.
Didn't say you were. We keep an eye on sharp edges here. Lots of guys just grow beards until trial.
Valentine looked at what appeared to be 100 keys at the guard's waist.
Is there a library?
Mostly paperbacks held together with rubber bands and porn. There's a bookcase or two for the highbrows. We got a store with the provisional journal and serial digest for sale. You can earn money in the fields or with janitorial work. Kitchen's full up now.
Thank you.
No problem, Major Valentine. Good luck with the trial. There's a packet of rules and instructions under your pillow. We do an hourly pass-through if you need anything.
A lawyer would be nice.
You'll have a meeting tomorrow or the next day.
Officers awaiting trial had a small cafeteria to themselves. Valentine ended up being at the end of the blue and yellow file, escorted by Young and another guard to the central cafeteria. Dinner, plopped onto a tray and eaten with a bent-tined fork and a spoon that looked as though it dated from the War of 1812, consisted of an unappetizing vegetable goulash with ground meat. 2 clusters of officers ate together at opposite sides of the cafeteria. A narrow man with long, thinning butterscotch hair in the smaller of the 2 cliques looked up at Valentine and made a motion to the seat next to him. But Valentine just dropped into the seat nearest the end of the food service line and immediately regretted it. He felt alone and friendless, as though already dead, forgotten and entombed in this prison. After dinner, some of the men smoked, and Valentine went to the slit-like barred windows and enjoyed the breeze created by the kitchen extractor fans. The Ozarks were black in the distance, the sun masked by haze.
Shooter or looter?
Didn't even hear him come. Valentine felt thick and tired, brain too apathetic to even function. If he didn't know better, he'd suspect one of the mild curry and sedatives had been put in the food. He looked at the man, short and close to bald, with an ivory mustache and growing beard. The eyes were crinkled and friendly.
Pardon?
Shooter or looter, boy? You're the new squirrel in the nut. What do they got you in for?
Murder. Quislings.
Then you're a shooter. That's those 3 over there.
He turned his chin in the direction of the group with the long-haired man.
I'm Berlinelli. Malfeasance in the performance of my duties.
Meaning?
Looter. I was doing what a lot of other guys were doing on a larger scale. Siphoning gasoline and diesel out of captured trucks and selling it.
I thought everyone in prison was innocent.
If you're a snitch, it's no hair lifted. I'm pleading out.
I haven't even talked to my lawyer yet. Need to write some letters. You wouldn't know where I could get paper, would you?
Who's running your floor?
The guard? Young, I think.
He's a decent guy. Just ask him. I gotta get back to my tribe. It's grogs and harpies in here. We don't mix much.
Thanks for crossing no man's land.
Just a little recon. Mission accomplished.
Valentine asked Young about paper and a pen as they locked him back in his cell. The long-haired man was 2 doors down.
Corporal Young?
Yes, Major.
Could I get some paper and a pencil? I need to write a few people and let them know where I am.
Sure, it's a standard SC envelope. Just don't seal it. Sensors. I'll slip them under the door gap tonight on my rounds.
Right. Thank you.
Young unlocked Valentine's door. Valentine couldn't help but glance at the fixture of a secondary bar, a bolt that could be slid home and twisted, fixed to the metal door, and the concrete with bolts that looked like they could hold in on Ka.
Major Valentine, I heard about you on my break today. The fight on that hill by the river in Little Rock. It's, a privilege.
Thank you, Corporal. Thanks for that.
A stick-like insect with waving antenna was exploring his sink. Valentine relocated it to the great outdoors by cupping it between his palms. He gave the insect its freedom. He used to be responsible for the lives of better than 1,000 men. Now he commanded an arthropod. As for the general staff training... What the hell? What the hell? Valentine met with his military council the next day, right after breakfast. The officer, a taciturn captain from the JAG office named Lueki, who looked as though she existed on cigarettes and coffee, laid out the charges and the evidence against him. Valentine wondered at having the same military institution both prosecuting and defending him, and incidentally acting as judge. Most of the evidence was from two witnesses, a captured Quisling who'd been in the prison camp, and a Southern Command nurse lieutenant named Koblenz who'd been horrified at the bloody vengeance wreaked by the outraged women. Valentine remembered the latter during the siege following the rising in Little Rock. Working tirelessly in the overwhelmed basement hospital atop Big Rock Mountain, he'd countersigned the surgeon's report recommending a promotion for her. He'd sign it again, given the opportunity.
They got a good case. Good, not insurmountable.
And my options are?
Plead guilty and see what we can get. Plead no contest, get a little less. Plead innocent. And we fight it out in front of a tribunal.
When you say not insurmountable, you mean...
Good. I like a fighter. For a start, you're a cat. We're hip-deep in precedent on cats not getting prosecuted for collateral casualties. We can blame the women for getting out of hand.
I'm not hiding behind the women. Try again.
If it were just the Quisling, we could toss a lot of dust around. Lieutenant Koblenz will be tough. Her statement is pretty damning.
She must have presented some case of charges for them to hunt me down so fast.
She didn't file them. They talked to every woman who survived that camp and the battle. All the others couldn't remember a thing.
Then who's behind this?
Your former commander, General Martinez. I should say General Commanding Interior, I suppose. He got promoted.
He's got a grudge against me. I gave evidence at a trial. Not sure if it can even be called that.
Interesting. Tell me more.
Valentine tried to sum the story up as concisely as he could. He had come out of Texas with his vital column of Quickwood and was ambushed by Red Hands, Quisling soldiers who wore captured uniforms from Southern Command stockpiles. He had a pair of Grog Scouts. They were smarter than dogs, horses, or dolphins and were far more capable fighters. The Grogs survived with a handful of others and with a single wagon load of Quickwood made it to General Martinez, more by accident than design, at his refuge in the Washitas. Martinez had two of his grogs shot at once, and it was only by putting a pistol to the general's head and arresting him for murder that Anka survived. The trial ended in a debacle, and Martinez's camp was divided. Many of the best soldiers decided to quit the place with Valentine. Ultimately, they made it to Little Rock, where the rising took place. Captain Lueki remained poker-faced throughout the story.
I don't know much about General Martinez or what happened during the Korean occupation. I spent it aspirating mosquitoes in a bayou. I'm going to ask for a delay in your trial date so I can prepare a defense, if you agree. Fair warning, it'll mean a lot more time for you in here.
She was a cold fish, but she was a very smart cold fish. As she packed up, Valentine was already missing the smell of tobacco and coffee.
Captain?
Yes, Major?
I'm not sure I want to fight this. I let prisoners get tortured and murdered right under my nose.
I see. Guilty, then?
I...
You don't have to decide this second. Can you do something for my satisfaction?
Yes.
Give me the names of some of those women. And no, we're not going to point fingers and say they did it. I just want to hear from all sides about what happened that night.
Valentine thought back to the all-too-familiar faces of the siege, especially those stilled in death. And not always faces. Petra Yao was only identified by the jewelry on the arm they found. Yolanda, who had to wear diapers, thanks to the mutilation. Gwen Cobb, who walked around with her collar turned up and her shirt tightly buttoned afterward. Rumor had it they'd written something on her chest with a knife point. The Weir sisters, who never talked about it except for their resulting pregnancies. Marta Ruiz, who hung her head and grew her hair out so it covered her eyes. Christ, those cocksuckers should have gotten worse. Valentine felt the old, awful hurts and the heat of that night come back. The thing, the shadow, the demon that sometimes wore the body of the ghost flooded into his bloodstream like vodka until his face went red and his knuckles white. There were things a decent man did, whatever the regulations said, and let any man who hadn't been there be damned.
Still want to plead guilty?
Prepare your case.
The men in the exercise yard kicked up little rooster tails of fine Arkansas dust. Valentine hadn't seen its like even in Texas. Soft as baby powder and able to work its way through the most tightly laced boot as they walked or threw a pie tin frisbee back and forth. He got to know his three fellow shooters there. They took their sourdough bread and soup out as far from the prison as possible and sat next to the 6-inch-high warning wire that kept them 10 feet from the double roll of fence. Colonel Alan Thrush was the highest ranking, not distinguished looking or brimming with the dash one expects from a cavalry leader. He had short legs and the deft, gentle hands of a fruit seller.
Caught a company of quislings doing scorched earth with the families inside in a little village called McMichael.
McMichael had risen against the Currians in response to the governor's famous Smash Them broadcast shortly after Valentine's move on Little Rock.
Left them for the crows in a ditch.
Unfortunately, his men left the customary set of spurs on the forehead of the quisling officer in charge, and the commander of a column of infantry following made the mistake of pointing out his handiwork to a pink-cheeked reporter who neglected to mention the charred corpses in McMichael. Colonel Thrush intended to fight out his court-martial and said so. Valentine was the only major. Captain Ian Farland was a clean-faced, attractive man whose wire-rimmed glasses somehow made him even better looking. A reserve officer who'd been put in charge of a fast-moving infantry company in Archangel, he'd been far out on the right flank on the drive to Hot Springs. His men recaptured a town, stayed just long enough to arm the locals, and when he asked the local mayor what to do with 6 captured quislings who had gunned down a farmer hiding his meager supply of chickens and rice, the mayor said to shoot them.
So I did. I'd seen it done before in the drive, especially to quisling officers.
But he put it in his day report. Can you believe that? Shoot, bury, and shut up.
Says the man who left bodies in a ditch.
Not better, that's for sure.
This last remark was from the thin man with the long honey-colored locks. Valentine had learned that his last name was Roderick, that he held the rank of lieutenant, though he looked on the weary side of 40, and nothing about the charges against him. Every time anyone asked, he shrugged and smiled.
Are you asking for court-martial?
Nah, I'm pleading guilty. They've got my paper trail. Something's holding up the show, though, and my trial day keeps getting postponed.
As does mine.
What's gonna happen is gonna happen. I'm asking for lobster and real clarified butter for my last meal. How about that? Better get it.
Shut up.
You start planning yours too, Colonel.
Valentine only got one piece of mail his first week in the nut. It came in an unaddressed envelope, posted from Little Rock, and bore a single line of typescript. How do you like it?
You've got a visitor, Major.
Young came to escort Valentine after the sun called lights out the next day. Valentine wondered if the guard ever got a day off. He'd seen him every day for a week. Valentine expected to be taken to some kind of booth with a glass panel and tiny mesh holes to speak through, but instead they brought him to a big, gloomy cafeteria on the second floor of the Asterisk. Light splashed in from the security floods outside. Young made a move to handcuff him to a table leg across from a brown-faced man in a civilian suit. Valentine was jealous of the man's clean smell, faintly evocative of sandalwood. In the nut, one got a new smock once a week and clean underwear twice. Valentine wondered at the smooth sheen of his visitor's jacket. The civilian's gray suit probably cost more than everything Valentine owned, wherever they were storing it now.
Don't bother, please.
Young put the handcuffs away.
It's an unofficial meeting. Won't you? Major Valentine, my name's Simmy. I'm a special executive of our struggling New Republic. Missouri by birth, Kansas City.
How'd you get out?
My mom ran. I was 14.
What's a special executive?
I'm attached to the cabinet.
That super glue is tricky stuff.
Quick, but dusty, Major.
You are going to come to the point of this.
Tobacco? Maybe a little bourbon?
No, thanks.
Trying to make things more pleasant for you?
You could get me a bar of that soap you used before meeting me.
Oh, of course. Ex-wolf. I'm very sorry about all this, you know. Are you a patriot, Major?
A patriot?
Do you believe in the cause?
Of course.
Body and soul?
Get to the point.
How would you like to do more to advance the cause than you've ever done before? Do something that would make the rest of your service, impressive though it is, look like nothing in comparison.
Let me guess. It involves the charges against me disappearing. All I have to do is go back into the Kurian zone and...
Quite the contrary, Major. It involves you pleading guilty.
That helps the cause how?
Major Valentine, I'm personally involved in charge of, in a way, some very delicate negotiations. A consortium of high-level officials in the Kurian zone.
Quislings.
Quislings, if you will. Quislings who run a substantial part of the Gulag in Oklahoma and Kansas. They're offering to throw in with us.
I see why you use good soap.
Stop it, Major. Listen. We're talking about the freedom of 100,000 people. Maybe more. An almost unbroken corridor to the Denver Protective Zone. Wheat, corn, oil, livestock.
I see the strategic benefits. Still, I don't see how my pleading guilty helps.
These Quislings are afraid of reprisals. Maybe not to them, but to some of the forces they command. The provisional government organizing the new Free Republic wants to show them that we're not going to permit atrocities.
Show? As in show trial?
You have me. You also have this. Plead guilty, and it comes with an offer. You'll get a harsh sentence, most likely life, but the government will reduce it, and you'll serve somewhere pleasant, doing useful work. 5 years from now, after we've won a significant victory somewhere, your sentence will quietly be commuted to celebrate. You could return to service, or we could arrange a quiet little sinecure at a generous salary. When was your last breakfast in bed? I recommend it.
I have the word of a special executive on that? I've never heard that title before.
Consider it as coming from your old governor's lips. He knows what you did in Little Rock. I'm speaking for him and for the other members of the provisional government. Do this, Major, and it'll be the best kind of victory. No bloodshed.
That's the carrot. Where's the stick?
You haven't given me an answer yet.
Let's say I fight it out.
Don't.
Let's say I do anyway.
The garage.
Will you accept a counteroffer?
I'm a negotiator, of course.
Do you know Captain Moira Stiakowski?
I know the name from your reports. She served with you on Big Rock.
Get her in here. I hear that same offer from her, and I'll take it.
Ah, it has to come from someone you trust. I feel a little hurt, Major. Usually my title.
I've had a gut full of titles in the Kurian zone. You can keep them.
I'll see what I can do. If she's on active service, I might not be able to get her.
She's the only... No. If you can't get her, get Colonel Chalmers. I've dealt with her before.
Simi extracted a leather-bound notepad and wrote the name down. She's with...
A judge with the JAG.
Very well. Thank you for your time, Major.
I have nothing but time.
Don't be so sure. Take my deal.
Simi looked up and waved to Young. The next day, rain tamped down the dust on the exercise yard. The shooters and the looters stayed on opposite sides of the pie slice between the frowning brown wings D&D, trying to keep their pannikins full of lukewarm lentils out of the rain as they sat on long baseball dugout-style benches.
Anyone got an offer from a civilian named Simi?
Not me.
Never heard of him.
We're getting pushed back again. God, it's like getting a shot when the doctor keeps picking up and putting down the big bore needle.
I had rabies shots. Hoppy bite.
He said all of this is more or less of a show. To convince some Gulag Quislings that Southern Command won't just shoot them dead if they join us.
News to me. You know, they might be firing smoke to get you to plead out.
They've tried murderers before. My uncle served with Keck's Raiders before they hung Dave Keck. But he killed women and children.
And Lieutenant Luella Parsons. When was that, 59?
She shot the mayor of Russellville.
Yeah, but she claimed he was working for them. Said she saw him talking to a Reaper. I heard they tried General Martinez himself for shooting a couple of grogs.
That makes sense. If you ask me, it's a crime not to shoot him.
Actually, it was. I was there. The two grogs he shot were on our side.
First I've heard of it. Were the charges dropped?
No.
You made a powerful enemy, Major. Martinez had a lot of friends in Mountain Home. He had the sort of command you'd send your son or daughter off to if you wanted to keep him out of the fight.
Technically, I was under him during Archangel. His charges are why I'm here, or that's what my council says.
Bastard. Heard he didn't do much.
I wouldn't know. I was over in Little Rock.
That was a hot one. You really threw some sand in there, Giz. What was her name?
Kessie. She was killed early on in the fighting. Bad luck.
What are you going to plead, Valentine?
Haven't made up my mind yet.
Valentine grew used to the tasteless food and the boring days of routine bleeding into one another and overlapping like a long hospital stay. He took a job in the prison library, but there was so little work to do they only had him in 2 days a week. He could see why men sometimes marked the days on the wall in prison. At times he couldn't remember if a week or a month had passed. The weather warmed and grew hot. Even the guards grew listless in the heat. Young brought in two of the pamphlets produced about the fight in Little Rock and had Valentine sign them.
Turns out I had a cousin in that camp your bears took. One's for him, and one's for his folks.
Part of Valentine's brain considered escape. He tried to memorize the schedule of the guard visits to his hallway, tried to make a guess at when the face would appear in the shatterproof window, but their visits were random. Also, there was the escape law. Any person who broke free while awaiting trial automatically had a guilty verdict rendered in absentia. He slept more than he was used to, and wrote a long letter to the Miskatonic about the mule list. He labored for hours on the report, knowing all the while that it would be glanced at, a note would be added to another file, maybe, and then it would be filed away, never to see the light of day again, until some archivist went through and decided which documents could be kept and which could be destroyed. He suggested that further investigation into the mule list was warranted. Anything important enough for the Kurians to put this kind of effort into, and apart from feeding and protecting themselves, the Kurians had few pursuits that Valentine was aware of, might prove vital. Valentine signed it. His last testament to the cause? Letters arrived in a strung-together mass. Outrage and gratitude from Post, who was on the mend in a convalescent home and had installed Narcisse in the kitchen. Wonder from Meadows, a few postcards from his former raisers who had heard about his imprisonment one way or another. One offer to, quote, come get you, sir, just send word, unquote. Nothing from Anka, which worried Valentine a little. The Golden One could read and write English as well as anyone in his former command, and better than many.
Visitor, Major.
This time, Corporal Young took him down to a regular visiting room. Corrals with glass between allowed for conversation through small holes in the glass, or plastic, Valentine thought when he saw all the scratches. There were fittings for phones, but it looked as though the electronics had been taken out. He waited for a few minutes, and then they brought in Myra Stiakowski. She wore good-fitting camis with her hunter's staff crossbar on her captain's bars. The only female bear he'd ever met looked about as healthy as she ever did, just a little pale and exhausted.
So, they got you after all.
I might say the same about you. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Dumb thing to joke.
Forget about it, wild card.
You know who's behind this, right?
Yes, that's Simmy.
No, the charges. It's Martinez.
My counselor told me. Seems like a sharp woman. What?
I was told, Val, in language that was, remarkable for its vigor, to come here and tell you to work with Simmy on this. The vigor of the language employed made me ask a few questions of a friend at GHQ. So, for the record, take the deal.
Off the record?
It's a setup for the benefit of some Oklahoma quislings. According to my source at GHQ, Simmy said, they need to see a few hangings to convince them. Don't look like that. You've got your deal from Simmy.
Simmy says. He's powerful enough to make it happen? Even with a Jagger judge?
The representatives are here and your trials are due to start. Luckily, you are the last one arrested. The others will go first. They'll get their hangings.
Is there anything you can do?
I don't have much experience in this. A couple of classes on military law and that farce we had near Magazine Mountain sums up my experience.
What about the newspapers? Your average townie thinks every Quisling should wind up in a ditch.
Military trials aren't public. I'll see if I can talk to your counsel. If it makes you feel any better, Anka is here. I set him up quietly in the woods nearby. I sent word to that cat you're partial to, but I haven't heard back.
Who's your source at GHQ?
The Lieutenant General's Chief of Staff, a major named Lambert. Says she remembers you from the War College, by the way.
dots. Valentine had a feeling back then that she was destined to rise. She practically ran the War College as a cadet.
Thank her.
Well, if there's anything else I can do...
You've already exceeded expectations. Again. Goodbye.
You did right by those women.
Young escorted him back to his cell.
We turned away a visitor for you yesterday, Major. Guards say she was a bit of a meal. Red hair.
Turned away?
You're to get no visitors except by judge's order. Sorry.
Is that usual?
Not for anyone in Southern Command. Sometimes we try quislings, red hands, men caught as spies. They're kept IC if it's thought they know something damaging if it gets out. But you guys are the first of ours.
Should the lack of precedent worry me?
I only work here, Major. But to tell the truth, it worries me.
Thrush got his trial the next day. He ate his dinner alone, and the shooters didn't see him until breakfast, reconstituted eggs that tasted like bottom sand. He wasn't inclined to talk about the proceedings.
My counsel keeps objecting and getting overruled. 6 witnesses for the prosecution. My defense starts today. It was wrangling over the witnesses. My counsel only got 2 in.
Do you have any family or friends in the audience?
Oh, there's an audience, all right. Never saw such a bunch of hatchet faces. Tight-ass Kansas types. I wouldn't be surprised if they're quislings.
I'm going to ask for nose plugs if they're there at my trial.
Valentine never saw Thrush again after that meal. Young, wary and somber, told him the verdict and sentence. Valentine wasn't surprised by the verdict, but he was shocked at his reaction upon hearing the punishment. The garage. Death by hanging. Thrush's sentence rang in his ears, rattled around in his head like a house-trapped bird, frantic but unable to escape. Death by hanging. Death by hanging. The garage. Death by hanging. Farland went next. The morning of his trial, he was almost cheerful.
Hey, I've admitted it. I did wrong, and I'll take what's coming. Serve time and address cadet classes about humane treatment of prisoners if they want. The court's got to see this as a case for mercy, right?
His guilty plea just meant he had to spend less time in the courtroom before hearing his sentence. The trial was over and done with in 30 minutes. This time, when Valentine asked, Young just shook his head. The guard had a hard time meeting Valentine's eyes. In the yard that day, Roderick didn't eat. He just rocked back and forth on his heels, whistling. Valentine felt he should know the tune, but couldn't identify it.
There's no business like show business, Val.
Roderick, what did you do that got you in here?
Guess it doesn't matter now, since none of us will be telling tales. Rape and murder of a Quisling prisoner. She was sweet and creamy, and I figured they'd do it plenty to our people. She had the softest looking brown hair, partly tied up in this red bandana. Funny, if her hair didn't catch my eye, she would have just been another prisoner walking by. But I had the boys pull her out of the line.
They reported you?
No. I felt guilty about it afterwards. Talked it over with the chaplain. He turned me in. Guess I don't blame him. There's got to be a difference between us and them, or what's the point? I'm almost so I want their brand of hemp medicine.
Roderick made a hanging motion at his neck with his finger, both gruesome and funny at the same time. Roderick's words stayed with Valentine for hours. Roderick deserved his fate. If the men saw their officers behaving that way, they'd degenerate into a sexually charged mob the next time. But wait, how different were their crimes really, save that Valentine amassed a higher body count? 8 men had died in horrible pain. In the afternoon, he met with Captain Luecki in a little white-painted room with a big table. She looked a little haggard.
I was handling Farland's case as well. I thought it was just going to be plea negotiations. I heard something about Simi making you an offer.
What happened to Thrush?
He moved on to death row. They hung him at midnight last night, in front of the witnesses. Farland will go tomorrow night. Our guests can't afford to stay long. Do Simi's deal.
Or end up like Thrush and Farland?
Maybe they're having you go last for a reason. After a few hangings, the bastards might be willing to see a little mercy.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
This last week has been strictly Old Testament Valentine, like Leviticus.
How did your checking on Martinez go?
It was quite revealing. I'm glad I wasn't at that trial. Were there really bullets flying in through the windows?
The prosecuting officer almost got raped.
There were times I thought a lynch mob coming for some overeager scalp taker wouldn't be altogether a bad thing. But to see it in real life...
It worked out in the end. My defense?
You don't have one. Every witness I wanted to call met with the same response from the judge. Major Valentine is on trial, not General Martinez. Denied. Valentine, honestly, take Simi's deal. If anyone has the pull to get you off the hook, it's him.
Pull? What kind of justice system is this?
A kind I've never seen before. Take Simi's deal.
If I don't?
I'll do my best. I have a feeling it won't be good enough.
Can you get me a visitor? There's a...
Sorry, no. Maybe after sentencing.
That'll do me so much good.
Look, you're frustrated. I understand. Go back to your room and think it over. Simi's offer is our only hope.
Our? You're not going to be standing in the garage with a rope around your neck by the end of the week.
You think I don't feel for the people I defend? It's a rotten world. A lot of the men who wind up here just got an extra spoonful of rottenness. Maybe they were born with it, or maybe it got fed to them in little mouthfuls over their lives. In either case, I do what I can for them.
I'm sorry. You've done more for me than I should expect, considering.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Val, I did turn up one thing. I couldn't see much of it, but Southern Command did investigate Martinez. There's some kind of intelligence file that I saw cross-referenced in the docs. Whatever they were looking into came up negative, so the file got sealed. You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?
All I know is he shot two of my complement, and that he kept a few thousand men drunk and hiding in the hills when Southern Command needed them.
Well, we'll talk tomorrow morning. It looks like your trial is going to be on Thursday.
Thank you, Captain. You should eat. You don't look so good.
I'm paving my own trip to the garage with my chain smoking. I'll see you in 16 hours.
Valentine spent the next day in a kind of weary anxiety. They would try Roderick in the morning. He was not going to contest the proceedings, so it would go quickly, and then Valentine's trial would begin in the afternoon. He tried to write letters and found himself unable to find words. Went through the motions of his job rebinding books at the prison library in a funk, unable to finish anything. He and Lewecki met again, but found they had little to say to each other. She simply asked if he'd take Simi's deal. He shrugged and said that he hadn't made up his mind yet, and she said she had the statement for the tribunal ready if he did decide to plead guilty. Valentine believed any speech she might make would be scrimshaw in a casket. What would happen to him would happen regardless. The only words that would count would be those that would place him in prison or send him to the garage. The hours slipped away until sundown, and the prison slowly bled off the heat it had soaked in during the day. Valentine lay in his cot, arms and legs thrown wide to allow the perspiration to disperse.
Room search.
Valentine knew the routine. They took him to a holding cell, this one had real bars, while two guards searched his room. The process usually took a half hour or so. This time, it took an hour. Were they worried he'd constructed some kind of weapon to use in court? When they returned him to his cell, Valentine noticed the usual cart outside, piled with his linens. Young looked at the other guard.
I'll take it from here, Steve-O.
You sure?
I'm sure. Enjoy your dinner.
Good luck, Major Valentine.
You mean good luck tomorrow, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Steve-O stuck out his hand, and Valentine shook it.
Just wanted to say I done it.
Steve-O wandered down the hall, whistling. Maybe he'd picked the tune up from Roderick.
You've got a letter. It says that it's not to be delivered to you until after your trial, but we had to check it anyway. No reason we couldn't check it before.
Of course.
Here you go. I get the feeling it's not from a friend.
Valentine saw the same plain envelope and paper. He opened the trifolded message. Enjoy the hanging. Wish I could be there.
Kind of funny this person being so sure of your verdict.
Funny is right.
Young extracted a multi-tool pocket knife, unfolded a screwdriver, and cleaned a black mark from beneath his thumb. A red-painted key dangled from the ring on the knife. Valentine saw it glitter in the dim light coming in from his window.
I've never had a problem with my job before, Major. Most people wind up here, well, they deserve it. The ones that don't get spat back out, usually along with some who do. Better that way than the other. But in 16 years, I've never seen anything like this.
Young pointed to a laundry bag on Valentine's bed.
Fresh linens for your bed and a new smock. Girl in the laundry is new. I think she doesn't read so good. If they screwed up, I'll be back in an hour and 15 minutes and I'll get you a new set of clothes.
Young placed the knife in his pocket.
Well, I gotta get down to the yard. We got sick dogs tonight, and until the vet is done looking at them, it's the two-legged animals that gotta walk between the wire. I know the night before a trial is always slow. Hope you get some sleep. Eventually.
As Young turned, Valentine heard the pocket knife bounce off his boot and hit the floor. It slid under his cot.
Damn cheap service trousers. Cotton my ass. More like knitted lint.
Young slammed the door behind himself, slammed it so hard it didn't close properly. Valentine didn't hear the deadbolt shoot home. Valentine waited one amazed second, then put his slip-on shoe in between the door and the jamb so it wouldn't close accidentally. He checked his laundry bag. A complete guard uniform, right down to polished shoes and belt, hat and handkerchief, was inside. Valentine read the stitched-on name tag. Young.
Thank you, Corporal Young.
He got into the uniform. It was a bit roomy, but he didn't look ridiculous once he punched a new hole in the belt with the knife's awl. It was a handy little tool. Two kinds of screwdriver, two blades, a saw and fish scaler, a can opener, a file, an awl, and a clipper. Though the last didn't look up to the job of cutting the wire in the yard. He put wadded up papers, one of them was the mystery note, around his feet so they fit better in the size 12 shoes. It occurred to him that if he were to pass as Young at a cursory glance, he'd need to be heavier. He wound a sheet around his midsection and put the belt back on at its worn notch. Feeling hot with excitement, Valentine stepped into the hall, trying to walk with his head turned down and handkerchief wiping his nose. He'd never seen cameras in the hall of this part of the prison, but he wanted to be safe. He left the room behind with no regret. When was the last time he slept in the same spot so many days in a row? His cabin in the Thunderbolt, most likely. He walked down the hall in the direction of the edge of the asterisk. Then he stopped in front of a door two down from his. Roderick's. The man was guilty of an atrocious crime. But if the system was gamed? Valentine looked through the window. The cot was empty. Had Young arranged for two escapes? Then his eyes picked up a figure in the gloom behind the sink cum toilet. Roderick had cheated the hangman. What looked like a twisted up sheet was knotted around the sink tap. Roderick was in a sitting position, but off the floor and held up by his sheet, face purple and tongue sticking out as stiffly as his legs. Valentine turned away from the window and looked at the dim hallway light to get the image out of his retinas. Every other time they'd brought him through the center of the asterisk, but there was a fire exit sign above a heavy door. While he knew some of the routes through the center of the building, there was too much chance of meeting another guard. Valentine tried the red key on the heavy lock, Roderick's purple tongue filling his vision every time he didn't concentrate, and the fire escape door opened. For a young guard, Young thought things through well enough. He listened with hard ears and heard footsteps somewhere on the floor below. Valentine slipped off the guard shoes, wincing at the sound of paper crinkling. The tiniest sounds were magnified when one was trying to keep silent, and padded down the stairs to the bottom level. He searched the doorframe leading outside. The door to the exterior had an alarm on it. Valentine flipped up a plastic access cover and saw a keypad with a green-faced digital readout. Someone had written 1144 on the interior. Valentine passed a wetted thumb over the ink and it smeared easily. It was still fresh. He punched the numbers into the keypad and then hit a key at the bottom marked Enter. Nothing changed color. Every nerve on edge, Valentine pushed open the crash door.
Thank God for minimum security.
A real prison would have had at least two more layers of doors. He put the shined shoes back on. While rugged enough for streetwear, he wondered how long they'd last if he had to hike out. His good boots were in storage somewhere in the bowels of the prison complex. The night air felt cool and clean, but the best thing about it was the amount. Free sky stretched overhead as far as even the cat's eyes could see. Valentine drank in the Arkansas night like a shot of whiskey, and even the memory of Roderick's tongue faded, a little. Keeping to the shadows, he walked around the edge of the building. Every now and then he stopped and pulled on a window as though checking to see if it was locked, all the while making for the pathway from the center of the asterisk to the gate in the double wire. A few lights burned in the subsidiary buildings and the courthouse. Valentine stepped onto the path leading to the gate and strode toward the gate. He sneezed repeatedly into his handkerchief as he stepped into the flood of light around the twin vehicular gates. Valentine had seen the gatehouse in operation often enough. People were supposed to travel through the inside, but guards desiring access to the area between the double row of fencing usually just had them open the gates. Cap pulled low on his head, he looked into the window, then stopped. Alessa Duvalier sat on some kind of console, legs prettily crossed, though she was in what Valentine thought of as her traveling clothes. A long jacket was folded carelessly next to her, her walking stick, which concealed a sword, next to it.
And so the blonde gives birth and asks the doctor, "How can I be sure it's mine?"
Shit. How did someone as ugly as young end up with you?
Oh, kindness. You're a very kind man.
Oh, if you ever want to trade him in on a newer model.
The young guard waved casually at Valentine, not taking his eyes off Duvalier.
Oh, let me.
She hit something without waiting for permission, and the twin gates slid sideways on greasy tracks. Valentine nipped out of sight of the gate and walked quickly down the road. In just a few minutes, Duvalier pulled him off the road and gave him a brief embrace.
I can never leave you alone, can I?
My luck always turns whenever you're not around.
If they arrested everyone who ever quietly shot a Quisling.
Let's not mention arrests or prisons for a while, all right? As of this moment, I'm a fugitive from justice subject to the escape law.
It's not so bad. My whole life, I've been a fugitive from just about everything.
What's the plan?
That's your end. But I gotta start underway. Oh, that Corporal Young's a good man. We need to burn those clothes.
You've got replacements?
They're with Anka.
Duvalier turned Valentine into the woods, and an owl objected somewhere. Valentine heard the soft flap of bats above, hunting insects in the airspace between branches and the ground. They stopped to listen twice, then found a burned-out house. A transport truck with a camouflaged canvas-covered back sat in front of it. Valentine marveled at it. The ruins of the garage held a small charcoal fire and a very large fawn-colored grog.
My David, we have escaped again.
If we're still at liberty in 24 hours, I'll call it an escape. Where'd you get the truck?
Stiakowski requisitioned us a transport.
Valentine stripped out of his uniform, and Duvalier flitted about gathering up the guard's clothing. Anka handed him a too familiar dun-colored overall.
Labor regiment?
It goes with the truck. The big boy looks like he could do a hard day's work with a shovel.
And you?
Duvalier covered her fiery red hair with a fatigue cap, climbed into her own overall, and zipped it up over freckled shoulders.
I'm management. You two look like the all-day lunch break type. Besides Val, you're the suckiest kind of driver.
Where do we go? My people will gladly shelter us at Omaha.
We'd have to cross half of Southern Command. No, let's go east.
East? Nothing there but river and then the Kurians, until the Piedmont.
I have an old friend in the Yazoo Delta, and I've got a mind to visit Memphis.
Memphis? The music's to die for, but the Kurians see to it that you do the dying.
Duvalier sprinkled something that smelled like kerosene out of a bottle onto the clothes and tossed them on the charcoal. They began to burn with admirable vigor.
Allie, I got my claws into a job. I'm wondering more and more about Post's wife, Gail.
She's gotta be dead if she was shipped.
No. She was some kind of priority cargo. I'll explain later. We need to go to the area around Arkansas Post on the river. Can you manage that?
Says the guy who just broke out of a high-security lockup thanks to me?
Medium security.
Duvalier tossed her bundle of traveling clothes and sword stick into the back of the truck.
How do I look?
You're better suited singing in the dome than for the labor regiment.
Gratitude. The man's got a vocabulary like a dictionary and he doesn't even know the meaning of the word.
Please. We had best be going.
The truck bumped eastward along the torn-up roads. A substantial piece of Consul Solon's army had been borrowed from the area around Cairo, Illinois, and points east, and they had employed a spike-like mechanism called a pave plow to destroy the roadbeds as they went home. Patching was still being done, so most vehicles found it easier to drive on the gravel shoulder. Duvalier drove, Anka rode shotgun, with his formidable gun pointing out through the liftable front windscreen to rest on the hood, and Valentine bounced along in the back, feeling every divot the worn-out shock absorber struck and hanging onto the paint and rust frame for safety. About noon, he felt the truck lurch to a stop. Duvalier spoke through the flap separating the driver from the cargo bed.
Just a road check. Rounders.
Afternoon, Digger. Transport warrant and vehicle check. Jesus, that's some big grog. He trained?
He's a citizen. Sick relief to Humboldt Crossing. There's the medical warrant. We've got an unidentified fever in the back, so you want to keep clear.
Do we? Well, we'll have to risk it. Orders to check every vehicle. We had a breakout at the military prison in Mountain Home.
Someone important, I take it.
David Valentine. Part Indian, black hair, scar on right side of face.
Never heard of him. He run over a general's dog?
Killed some Quisling prisoners, they say.
He used too many bullets?
Whoa, Sarge, we got someone back here.
Light poured into the back of the truck, hurting Valentine's eyes and giving him an instant headache. The hole was only big enough to put his head through.
Well, well, well.
He doesn't look too sick. Wouldn't you say, Slick?
No.
This look like our Quisling killer to you?
No, Sarge. 5'1" in Chinese, 3 gold teeth. No way this is our man.
I should get my eyes checked.
The sergeant wrote something down.
I need to erase, because I see a 6'6" black individual with a big tattoo of Jesus on his chest. Oh, crap, this stop form looks like shit now.
He tore a piece of printed paper off his pad, wadded it in one massive hand, and tossed it over his shoulder.
Anyway, it ain't our killer.
Nope, that's not David Valentine.
Too bad, in a way. Old friend of mine, Ron Ayers, fought under him in Little Rock. Well, I'd buy this Major Valentine a drink if I could.
So you've told me. About 100 times. Okay, get your sick man out of here before we all catch it. I'd turn south for Clarendon about 3 miles along. There's an old grounded bus shell with Rural Network Pickup J painted on it alongside the road. No roadblocks that way to slow up your sick man, and I think this thing can make it through the wash at Yellow Creek.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Well, thank you for having such a pretty smile. Pleasant journey.